Chapter 40. Son-in-law having permanently remained with her. Your servant, Mrs. Loveday, he said, and I will tell you at once what I come for. You will say, that I take time by the forelock when I inform you, that it is to push on my long-wished-for alliance why your daughter, as I believe she is now a free woman again. Thank you, Mr. Dairyman, said the mother placably. But she is ill at present. I'll mention it to her when she is better. Ask her to alter her cruel resolves against me, on the score of my consuming passion for her. In short, continued Festus, dropping his parlor language in his warmth, I'll tell thee what, Dame Loveday, I want the maid, and must have her. Mrs. Loveday replied, that was very plain speaking. Well, tis. But Bob has given her up. He never meant to marry her. I'll tell you, Mrs. Loveday, what I have never told a soul before. I was standing upon Budmouth Quay on that very day in last September, that Bob set sail, and I heard him say to his brother John, that he gave your daughter up. Then it was very unmannerly of him to trifle with her so, said Mrs. Loveday warmly. Who did he give her up to? Festus replied with hesitation. He gave her up to John. To John? How could he give her up to a man already over head and ears in love with that actress woman? Oh? You surprise me. Which actress is it? That Miss Johnson. Anne tells me that he loves her hopelessly. Festus arose. Miss Johnson seemed suddenly to acquire high value as a sweetheart at this announcement. He had himself felt a nameless attractiveness in her, and John had done likewise. John crossed his path in all possible ways. Before the yeoman had replied, somebody opened the door, and the firelight shone upon the uniform of the person they discussed. Festus nodded on recognizing him, wished Mrs. Loveday good evening, and went out precipitately. So Bob told you he meant to break off with my Anne when he went away? Mrs. Loveday remarked to the trumpet major. I wish I had known of it before. John appeared disturbed at the sudden charge. He murmured that he could not deny it, and then hastily turned from her and followed Dairyman, whom he saw before him on the bridge. Dairyman! He shouted. Festus started and looked round. Well, trumpet major, he said blandly. When will you have sense enough to mind your own business, and not come here telling things you have heard, by sneaking behind people's backs? Demanded John hotly. If you can't learn in any other way, I shall have to pull your ears again, as I did the other day. You pull my ears? How can you tell that lie, when you know 'twas somebody else pulled them? Oh no. I pulled your ears, and thrashed you in a mild way. You'll swear to it? Surely 'twas another man? It was in the parlor at the public house. You were almost in the dark. And John added a few details, as to the particular blows, which amounted to proof itself. Then I heartily ask your pardon for saying 'twas a lie. Cried Festus, advancing with extended hand and a genial smile. Sure, if I had known 'twas you, I wouldn't have insulted you by denying it. That was why you didn't challenge me then. That was it. I wouldn't for the world have hurt your nice sense of honor by letting ego unchallenged, if I had known. And now, you see, unfortunately I can't mend the mistake. So long a time has passed since it happened, that the heat of my temper is gone off. I couldn't oblige ye, try how I might, for I am not a man, trumpet major, that can butcher in cold blood, no, not I, nor you neither, from what I know of ye. So, willy-nilly, we must fain let it pass, eh? We must, I suppose, said John, smiling grimly. Who did you think I was, then, that night when I boxed you all around? Apostrophe, apostrophe, no, don't press me, apostrophe, replied the yeoman. I can't reveal. It would be disgracing myself to show how very wide of the truth the mockery of wine was able to lead my senses. We will let it be buried in eternal mixins of forgetfulness. Apostrophe, apostrophe, as you wish, apostrophe, said the trumpet major loftily. But if you ever should think you knew it was me, why, you know where to find me? Apostrophe, apostrophe, and Loveday walked away. The instant that he was gone, Festus shook his fist at the evening star, which happened to lie in the same direction as that taken by the dragoon. Now for my revenge. Duels? Lifelong disgrace to me, if ever I fight with a man of blood below my own. There are other remedies for upper-class souls, Matilda, that's my way. Apostrophe, Festus strode along till he reached the hall, where Cripplestraw appeared gazing at him from under the arch of the porter's lodge. Derryman dashed open the entrance hurdle with such violence, that the whole row of them fell flat in the mud. Mercy, Maester Festus! Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Cripplestraw. Surely, I says to myself, when I see ye coming, surely Maester Festus is fuming like that, because there's no chance of the enemy coming this year after all. Apostrophe, apostrophe, CRR Ripplestraw. I have been wounded to the heart, apostrophe, replied Derryman, with a lurid brow. And the man yet lives, and he wants air horse pistols instantly? Certainly, Maester F apostrophe, no. Cripplestraw, not my pistols, but my new cut clothes, my heavy gold seals, my silver-topped cane, and my buckles, that cost more money than he ever saw. Yes, I must tell somebody, and I'll tell you, because there's no other fool near. He loves her heart and soul. He's poor, she's tip-top genteel, and not rich. I am rich, by comparison. I'll court the pretty play actress, and win her before his eyes. Apostrophe, apostrophe, play actress, Maester Derryman? Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes. I saw her this very day, met her by accident, and spoke to her. She's still in the town perhaps because of him. I can meet her at any hour of the day, but I don't mean to marry her. Not I will court her for my pastime, and to annoy him. It will be all the more death to him, that I don't want her. Then perhaps he will say to me, you have taken my one ewe lamb, meaning that I am the king, and he's the poor man, as in the church verse, and he'll beg for mercy when 'tis too late, unless, meanwhile, I shall have tired of my new toy. Saddle the horse, Cripplestraw, tomorrow at 10. Apostrophe, full of this resolve to scourge John Loveday to the quick through his passion for Miss Johnson, Festus came out booted and spurred at the time appointed, and set off on his morning ride. Miss Johnson's theatrical engagement having long ago terminated, she would have left the royal watering place with the rest of the visitors, had not matrimonial hopes detained her there. These had nothing whatever to do with John Loveday, as may be imagined, but with a stout, staid boatbuilder in Cove Row by the quay, who had shown much interest in her impersonations. Unfortunately, this substantial man had not been quite so attentive since the end of the season as his previous manner led her to expect, and it was a great pleasure to the lady to see Mr. Derryman leaning over the harbor bridge with his eyes fixed upon her as she came towards it after a stroll past her elderly wooer's house. Odd take it, ma'am, you didn't tell me, when I saw you last, that the tooting man with the blue jacket and lace was yours devoted? Apostrophe, apostrophe, began Festus. Who do you mean? Apostrophe, apostrophe, in Matilda's ever-changing emotional interests, John Loveday was a stale and unprofitable personality. Why, that trumpet major man. Apostrophe, apostrophe, oh. What of him? Apostrophe, come, he loves you, and you know it, ma'am. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she knew, at any rate, how to take the current when it served. So she glanced at Festus, folded her lips meaningly, and nodded. I've come to cut him out. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she shook her head, it being unsafe to speak till she knew a little more of the subject. What? Apostrophe apostrophe said Festus, reddening. Do you mean to say that you think of him seriously, you, who might look so much higher? Apostrophe apostrophe, constant dropping will wear away a stone, and you should only hear his pleading. His handsome face is impressive, and his manners are oh, so genteel. I am not rich. I am, in short, a poor lady of decayed family, who has nothing to boast of, but my blood and ancestors, and they won't find a body in food and clothing. I hold the world, but as the world, there remain yo a stage where every man must play a part, and mine a sad one. Apostrophe apostrophe she dropped her eyes thoughtfully and sighed. We will talk of this, apostrophe said Festus, much affected. Let us walk to the lookout. Apostrophe apostrophe she made no objection, and said, as they turned that way, apostrophe Mr. Derryman, a long time ago I found something belonging to you, but I have never yet remembered to return it. Apostrophe apostrophe and she drew from her bosom the paper which Anne had dropped in the meadow when eluding the grasp of Festus on that summer day. Zounds, I smell fresh meat. Apostrophe apostrophe cried Festus, when he had looked it over. Tis in my uncle's writing, and tis what I heard him singing on the day the French didn't come, and afterwards saw him marking in the road. Tis something he's got hid away. Give me the paper, there's a dear. Tis worth sterling gold. Apostrophe apostrophe halves then. Apostrophe apostrophe said Matilda tenderly. Gad, yes anything. Apostrophe apostrophe replied Festus, blazing into a smile, for she had looked up in her best new manner at the possibility that he might be worth the winning. They went up the steps to the summit of the cliff and dwindled over it against the sky. XXXVII. Reaction, there was no letter from Bob, though December had passed, and the new year was 2 weeks old. His movements were, however, pretty accurately registered in the papers, which John still brought, but which Anne no longer read. During the second week in December the Victory sailed for Sheerness, and on the 9th of the following January the public funeral of Lord Nelson took place in St. Paul's. Then there came a meager line addressed to the family in general. Bob's new Portsmouth attachment was not mentioned, but he told them he had been one of the 48 seamen who walked 2 and 2 in the funeral procession, and that Captain Hardy had borne the banner of emblems on the same occasion. The crew was soon to be paid off at Chatham, when he thought of returning to Portsmouth for a few days, to see a valued friend. After that he should come home. But the spring advanced without bringing him, and John watched Anne Garland's desolation with augmenting desire to do something towards consoling her. The old feelings, so religiously held in check, were stimulated to rebelliousness, though they did not show themselves in any direct manner as yet. The miller, in the meantime, who seldom interfered in such matters, was observed to look meaningly at Anne, and the trumpet major from day to day, and by he spoke privately to John. His words were short, and to the point. Anne was very melancholy, as he had thought too much of Bob. Now it was plain that they had lost him for many years to come. Well, he had always felt that of the two he would rather John married her. Now John might settle down there, and succeed where Bob had failed. So if you could get her, my sonny, to think less of him, and more of thyself, it would be a good thing for all. Apostrophe apostrophe, an inward excitement had risen in John, but he suppressed it and said firmly, fairness to Bob before everything. Apostrophe apostrophe, he have forgot her, and there's an end on't. Apostrophe apostrophe, she's not forgot him. Apostrophe apostrophe, well, well, think it over. Apostrophe apostrophe, this discourse was the cause of his penning a letter to his brother. He begged for a distinct statement whether, as John at first supposed, Bob's verbal renunciation of Anne on the quay had been only a momentary ebullition of friendship, which it would be cruel to take literally, or whether, as seemed now, it had passed from a hasty resolve to a standing purpose, persevered in for his own pleasure, with not a care for the result on poor Anne. John waited anxiously for the answer, but no answer came, and the silence seemed even more significant than a letter of assurance could have been of his absolution from further support to a claim which Bob himself had so clearly renounced. Thus it happened that paternal pressure, brotherly indifference, and his own released impulse operated in one delightful direction, and the trumpet major once more approached Anne as in the old time. But it was not till less he had been left to herself for a full 5 months, and the bluebells and ragged robins of the following year were again making themselves common to the rambling eye, that he directly addressed her. She was tying up a group of tall flowering plants in the garden. She knew that he was behind her, but she did not turn. As he had subsided into a placid dignity which enabled her, when watched, to perform any little action with seeming composure very different from the flutter of her inexperienced days. "Are you never going to turn round?" he at length asked good-humoredly. She then did turn, and looked at him for a moment without speaking, a certain suspicion looming in her eyes, as if suggested by his perceptible want of ease. "How like summer it is getting to feel, is it not?" she said. John admitted that it was getting to feel like summer, and, bending his gaze upon her with an earnestness which no longer left any doubt of his subject, went on to ask, Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.